Hello, Terry. Welcome to your next mission video podcast. Today, we're going to hear an amazing story of an Army veteran who survived a battle with a suicide bomber. The detonation of artillery shells triggered by an IED in a close encounter with a rocket, only to find that his toughest battle would come after return home. Sounds grim, but in the end, it's a success story of resilience that you give hope to anyone out there on the verge of giving up. Please stay with us. I doubt you'll ever hear a story quite like this one.
Welcome to Your Next Mission Video Podcast, where we tell the stories of those who have served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition to financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to all our veterans, service members, and families for your service to our great country. Now, before we get started, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, and Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback, and USAA, whose mission is taking care of the military community and their families always. With additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision, together they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans' families, and I say it every week, we love them too. Today we're going to talk about emotional resilience and overcoming of mental health challenges that many people may face after combat. And I'm excited to introduce Master Sergeant retired Pasha Palanker, who received two Purple Hearts because of his actions in combat. Hey, welcome to the show.
An honor to be here, SMA Millie. I remember you were in my chain of command as I was a private going through basic training. And now it's such an honor and a privilege to be here talking with you today.
Well, it's really, I tell you the truth, it's my honor to really have you on the show because you've certainly lived and went through a lot of stuff, lived an amazing life and did a lot of things, and I'm glad to be able to tell your story today. But before we do that, we have a lot to talk about. Before we really get started, would you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I was born in Soviet Union, Republic of Moldova. And my family immigrated to Los Angeles when I was 15 years old in 96. And, you know, I was so grateful to be in America. I actually remember the first probably 6 months of my life here. Even though we were on welfare, we were in a very poor neighborhood. All my clothing was donated. I remember being turned down at a McDonald's trying to buy a Big Mac with food stamps. That was, you know, it seems like it's a rough life by American standards. But to me, it was like I was living a dream. And for the first 6 months of my life here, I remember I would pinch myself just to make sure that I wasn't dreaming. And out of sheer gratitude for the opportunity that was given to me by this nation is why I decided to enlist in the Army in 2003.
Yeah, you know, I tell people all the time, the Army changed my life, and probably the smartest decision I ever made was joining the military, and it made me grow up, made me see a lot of things a lot of differently. That's for doggone sure. Hey, you volunteered to deploy in 2003 and eventually found yourself literally face-to-face with a suicide bomber. Can you share that story with us or with the audience anyway?
Sure. So it was in April of 2005, April 8th, 2005, actually a few days before my birthday. We were coming back from a mission. We were in a four-vehicle convoy. I was the third vehicle right behind the EOD truck when I noticed this white Oldsmobile kind of steering towards the EOD truck that was right in front of me. And EOD does not have a gunner, just the way that vehicle is designed. So I fired a couple of warning shots. And when that happened, that driver swerved off the road. And I was like, okay, it's just a guy that's not paying attention. And then as our vehicle was getting closer to him, he started to push. into our vehicle. And at that point, I realized what was going on. So I fired a couple of shots in his hood, and then, I mean, it happened pretty quickly. And then he was parallel with me, probably 2 to 3 feet away from me. And the only option that I had in that moment was pick up my M4, lean over the gunner's protective plates, and engage him to shooting over the top. But before that happened, my mind went through this. My brain was like, that's a terrible idea. You should just drop down and into the safety of the vehicle. And then I felt this anger unlike anything I've ever experienced. And that anger is what drove me to take action, pick up my rifle, lean over, and engage him. So that's what I did. I ended up neutralizing the suicide bomber. And then as we passed probably 10 feet, when he was 10 feet behind us, and I'm like, we have our eyes are locked, he detonates. And I'm pretty sure that he was detonated remotely by the people that filmed that whole interaction. There's an Al-Qaeda propaganda video that was released a few months later. And I'm pretty sure that's who detonated it. But so that was that day. Anger saved my life and the lives of my teammates.
Yeah, those things happen so quickly too. I mean, you just it probably seemed like time was going really fast, and it probably was. But you probably in a matter of minutes you had to make a big decision exactly what to do. Yeah.
Seconds. I think it was probably 15 seconds. 15 seconds, the whole interaction.
Yeah. But you did the right thing. There's no question about that. I haven't had that kind of incident happen to me, but I have had a couple of things that happened to me years ago that scared the heck out of me. And I just, I remember I was overseas one time, and this was just actually in a convoy with some senior leadership. And same thing, a vehicle pulled up next to us. But the guys that was with us actually pulled their weapons out and pointed right down to the driver right there and says, move. And the driver moved. You never know what they're doing. That's for doggone sure. Hey, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. I mean, that's probably the only incident like that ever occurred when you was over there, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, no, it happens all the time because sometimes they're just ignorant or they don't know that they should stop and pull away. That's what makes it so difficult. Those split second, they're literally life and death decisions, whether it's our lives or their lives. But it's a tough situation to be in.
Yeah. Well, no. The other thing you said, command detonated. A lot of times they may or may not know their explosive in their vehicles too. Because they put explosives in those vehicles, they put them in there, or they put a vest on them, and they're command detonated from a different direction of some sort. But I'm glad I'm never in that situation. I'm not sure how I would react, but you certainly reacted in the correct way. Hey, if it weren't tough enough, you had another close call too, I guess. And about a week before you're getting ready to get, which is really bad, getting ready to get out of there and go home. What happened? Yeah. You had something else happen too, didn't it?
Yeah. So this was about a week before we're going home, and it's my day off. It was my team leader's day to go out on the mission with a new team that came to replace us. We were doing left seat, right seat, so only one of us would go out. But my team leader, Carlos Tyson, ended up throwing his back out right before the call went out. And once the call came in, I volunteered, and I went out on this mission, and it looked like a setup. There was an IED, a primary IED that we neutralized, and then as myself and the EOD tech went downrange to go see if we can find anything left from the initial IED, I saw this 1-inch strip of blue electrical tape right in the middle of the road. Actually, prior to that happened, the EOD tech found this wire that went into the ground. He started yanking on it. This is going on. So I went on my own, and I'm walking around. I see this blue electrical tape, and I don't know why it's laying right in the middle of the road. Instead of picking it up, I kicked it, and it went to the side of the road. So I took my 3 steps towards it, and as I'm messing with it with my foot, detonation happens. And I didn't know what happened. I didn't know where I was. I just knew that something blew up and I couldn't feel anything. I couldn't see anything. I was just in this limbo space. And I thought that this was it. I thought, I'm in that transition space between life and death. I was actually waiting for this Homer Simpson moment when your soul separates from your body and drifts away. And then I started to feel the burning in the back of my legs. And I was like, man, I can feel that. I'm alive since I can feel that. My legs are gone, but at least I'm alive. And then I wiggled my toes and I felt them press against my boots. Like, no way. And then I did the same thing with my fingers. And then I realized I was laying face down in the ground. And then just like every other 24-year-old young man, I checked my groin area and everything. Everything was fine there. And by that time, the medic runs up to me and he looks at me. He looks at me like that cartoon jaw to the ground, because they called for a medevac as soon as the explosion happened. And the medevac was for a KIA. Nobody thought I'm alive, let alone in one piece. And he saw me in one piece. And then when I moved, he was like, oh my God. And then he jumped on me and he checked. Not one piece of shrapnel was in me. And that ID was consisted of five 155 artillery shells.
Oh my. Yeah.
Five.
Oh my goodness.
Five 155 artillery shells. I've been so blessed during these faithful moments, and I'll forever be grateful for that.
Yeah, most people would tell you go buy a lottery ticket because you got a lot of luck, buddy.
Yeah, well, I've won the lottery. I don't need.
Well, yeah, you're still alive. You know the other thing though. You sent some interesting things. I was taught years ago. I was on a tank and there was a board behind this tank and I started to kick the board and I said, wait a minute, I better not kick the board. And so I really got a little mine detector and there was a mine underneath there. And so I was always taught never to touch anything, never pick anything up, don't pull cords or anything. I had a claymore one time that, again, it's years ago, I was out in the jungle, and it was, you know, I put them out there and put sandbags around them and all that stuff to blow them if somebody come in. And in the morning, you know, the fuse was still in them. I'd always jerk it, pull it towards me so I could see it and then walk up and disconnect it. And then one day I did that. I pulled it, and all I got was the end of the cord had been cut. And the guy said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm not going to go get it. So he wanted to go ahead and go get it. So that's it. Oh, man. After, you know, let me ask you a question. I you've had a lot happen to you and a lot of things that certainly I'm sure scared the heck out of you, and you feel blessed every day. One other thing I would tell you too, a lot of people get closer to God in combat. I tell that people all the time too. I mean, I used to say all sorts of prayers, but anyway, after 2 minutes instances like that, I mean, things like that, do you ever think and say, maybe the military is not good for me. I need to get out and go do something else.
You know what? It seems like it's the opposite. After that happens, you know, and you come back, you can come back home to a hero's welcome. And it's just after surviving stuff like that, it just becomes a core part of your identity. That's what happened to me. Actually, I'll tell you, you know, jumping is a big part of my life. And it was while I was in the Army. But you talk about what is meant for you, what is not meant for you. I was in airborne school and, you know, my first jump, we're at the 32nd mark and I feel a pop and my parachute comes out and the Black Hawk jumps on me and takes the static line off, takes me off the plane, off the line. And I see my stick get out. And then as I'm sitting there, we go do another pass and the stick that's across from me, they start going out and I see the small female just passes out right before the door and just kind of falls out. And then as we're on the way down, the instructors, they're messing with me. It's like, maybe this is a sign. Maybe this is not for you. And you know, they were messing with me. And then, then once we landed, they got me right next on the next flight. And I got out and I jumped out and you know, I got my airborne wings with the other four jumps. And I still to this day with over 1,000 parachute jumps, you know, you would think that starting out that way with jumping or with these with this deployment, to me, it was almost the opposite. That's how I know maybe there is something special in there for me.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I remember when I jumped, you're supposed to go 1,001, 1,002. I don't think I counted till my fourth jump. I just let the chute hit. And oh, man, I'm safe. I'm ready to go. The other thing is, I really do. I believe in faith. Things are made to happen. And God's got more for you than just being a soldier. You're going to help other people or do whatever you're going to do. But that's an amazing story. Hey, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about that. You had a 2015 deployment to Iraq when you started to realize that your mental health was maybe slipping a little bit here, Len. So stay right there. We'll be right back. I want to talk about that. This is Your Next Mission Video Podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant of the Army. And if you're enjoying this discussion, I know that you are because we're talking to a warrior. A soldier, a person that loves this country and loves our military and wants to do all he can to help the veteran community each and every day. Please like us. Click on that subscribe button below. Be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after a word from my presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission Video Podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Their members are the mission. Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. And USAA.
A promise is a trust not to be broken. Whether spoken with an oath or sealed with a pinky. And after 100 years, we're still taking care of the military community and their families. That's our mission, always.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with Pasha Palanker, who's battle back from the brink of suicide is an inspiration for all of us. Pasha, you went back to Iraq, I guess it was in 2015. It was, and I got to tell you something before we get started here. I went back to places I've been before. And I felt really uncomfortable when I got in there. And I was always sort of looking around and seeing what was going on. I just felt sort of weird for me. Was it hard for you to return to the same area, when you had close calls, there?
So I went back 10 years later. 10 years later, and, in those 10 years in between, I did not realize how much what happened during the first deployment, how much of an impact that had on me. And for the first, probably a third of it, for the first few years, I just was not aware of these things happening under the surface, these anger outbursts. Stuff was happening, but it didn't have a big impact on my life. So it was not a big deal. Then the next 3 years, I knew something was wrong, but I was just kind of in denial. And then the last few years before I went back, I knew I had a problem, but I was afraid. I was afraid of the stigma that comes with mental health care. I was afraid of losing my security clearance if I went to behavioral health or getting taken off of deployment rotations or jump status. But when I went back in 2015 and, that ramp of a C-17 opened and the smells, the sounds of Baghdad, they just hit me. And as that happened, I felt unzipped. Everything that was stuffed deep down inside, it just came flooding out. And man, it was tough. It was tough to go through that deployment, to have to do my job, which was not easy, while also trying to keep all of those emotions suppressed and just so that I can function one day at a time. It was not easy.
Yeah. Did you talk to anybody about the how you was going or how you was feeling at all?
No. No, I was afraid. I was afraid that if I would talk to my team leader and let him know, hey, this is what I'm dealing with, I was afraid of looking weak. And by that time, I was already in the special operations community. So, and it just, that's not something that we did. You don't show, especially when it's the invisible wounds, when it's physical, when it's if your you know, hand is broken, your hand is broken. There's nothing that can be done. But the stuff that we carry on the inside, nobody talked about that. Nobody. It doesn't matter what you've been through, what you've done. You just drive on and carry on.
You know, it's the same for all of us. I remember, you know, I remember we're going to talk about this, but I came back out of the same issues, and I didn't want anybody to know that that I had a problem. Because, you know, you want to keep it yourself, and you're really, quite frankly, trained to keep that stuff to yourself and not talk about it to anybody. Now, if you're married, you may say something to your wife or whatever, but you're right. You have the perception that people will look at you a little bit differently, and they'll think you're weak, and you don't want to do that, especially if you're in a leadership position. You know, try to set the example for the people around you, and they're looking at you to do the right thing. So it's just tough. And it's I think we're in a better place now. I think we're probably doing a little bit better in the military now. But I think there's still people that think the same way you did and the same way I did at the time, that if you start talking about this stuff, it'll affect your promotions, your assignments, and everything mm-hmm. else. So it makes sense. And the other thing, it has a lot to do with maybe your age, too. When you're a little bit younger, I'm not saying 24. I guess he was about 24, yeah. 25 at the time. But still, you're still a young man that wants to progress in the military and stay as long as you can and get promoted as fast as you can. So, you know, it's just tough. It's just really tough.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? I'll tell you, it's a lot better. It's a lot better. I still get to be a part of military exercises now and then in a mentor capacity. And I talk to active duty guys. And that's what's encouraging is that what we're doing right now, this conversation, it has made an impact and it will continue to make an impact. And I think once we're on that path, things will continue to get better. But there will always be guys that will have a hard time either accepting the reality or just talking about these experiences.
Yeah. I gotta tell you this. Certain things that I say, even today, now this is, I was in really in any kind of really bad combat, probably over 50 years ago. But certain things that I say, I have to be very careful about what I say because I'll cry. And I just tear up. And really, quite frankly, I try to change the subject real quick. If somebody says something, or I don't know what it is. It just, if I think about something, and it just, I just chokes me up. And it's just hard. It's difficult. Do you go through anything like that? I mean, you get emotional about stuff?
I used to when just a few short years ago, when I would talk about this stuff, it would come up, and especially some of the stuff that we haven't gotten to yet, but I'm assuming we will in this conversation. I used to, but I noticed the more I've talked about it, the more I've healed, and it doesn't come out as much as it did before. But you know what? I've been having a conversation with somebody and it actually happens quite often when I see somebody else break down. And to me, it's such a powerful moment. But most importantly, it's a moment that I almost celebrate, because it's when somebody is vulnerable enough to do that, that's when healing happens. And it's not happy, is not the right word, but I'm glad that when I see somebody being vulnerable enough to where they trust me enough to, you know, to shed their tears, because that's the start of healing.
Yeah. I think the other thing too is you got to talk about it. You got to talk about your issues. You got to be very open about what bothers you. And that's therapy for you. If you hold it in, you're, you know, something's going to happen. Something bad's going to happen. So you got to just sort of let it out and let people know how you feel. Even if they don't want to listen, just tell them, I really don't quite care, but I'm gonna say what I think I need to say. And if you don't want to listen, just, you know, go somewhere else, I guess. I don't know.
Well, that's, you know, that's the benefit of therapy, is that when you talk it out, you process what happened. And so it's either therapy or it has to, you can't just talk to the about this stuff with anyone. It usually has to be somebody that has been through similar experience. Otherwise, you share something that's deeply personal and it's not somebody who hasn't been through it. They just don't understand it. So they don't receive it well. And when they don't receive it well, you don't feel heard. You actually feel misunderstood, and that, because that happened to me a ton. And when that happens, that kind of pushes me away from that person and more into isolation. It was like, well, what's the point? It's like, people don't understand what I'm going through, so I'm just going to keep it to myself instead of that feeling of being rejected when you share that deeply personal stuff. But I'll tell you, that's what I did for 10 years. When you don't talk and you hold it in, there's a price to that. It starts out slow and you don't feel it, but it starts as this like little tension that you carry on the inside. But over the years, if you don't let that tension out, it starts building out, building up. And it, to me, it got to the point where I felt like I had 245-pound plates on my chest. It literally felt like I was being suffocated by the burdens that I was carrying inside. So that's the cost of not talking. I think it to yourself.
Well, I think go ahead, Bud.
And then there's follow-on consequences that come from carrying that tension. There's a price to pay for everything that we're doing and that we're not doing.
Yeah. What I was going to say, though, is I think if you don't talk about it, one day you're just going to explode. Something's going to happen. Something's bad's going to happen. That's when you're going to react or do something. That's somebody will say something and you'll just all of a sudden turn on them. They're probably not even involved in you in any way, just something like a road rage or anything like that. The other thing you said a minute ago you said a lot of stuff that was interesting, but I remember I went to the Pentagon. I told a story not too long ago. I went to the Pentagon, and there was a guy in there that had been shot in the head twice. He was a special ops guy, then went to the 82nd, and he shot in the head twice. And so I went in there, and it was and the lady said, "Well, see that guy right there?" He says, "Well, he won't talk to anybody." And so I said, "Okay." So I went over there and said, "Hey, I'm Jack Tilly. He used to be the Sergeant Major of the Army and all this." And the guy just opened up and started talking about all sorts of stuff. In fact, he talked so much, it took me an hour to get away from him. No, I didn't want to get away. I wanted to keep talking to him. But the fact of the matter is that he knew I understood his issues. And I walked in his boots. And so we had that connection with him that just made it so much meaningful for him, hopefully, and for me, too. It was a great decision. So I think you got to have people around you that that understand exactly what you're going through or what you went through, though. Hey, let me ask you another question. How difficult was it for you to, you know, transition out of the military? I know I struggled a little bit. Did you struggle? Have any problems when you were just getting out of the military?
Well, yeah, that was brutal. So after that deployment, and that's when the rocket situation happened, I ended up being sent home early from that deployment. And So that's when I was in a really bad way, but I started to get help and I was feeling better. I was not deployable anymore, but I became the air guy for my unit, and I became a free fall instructor. But then in 2018, I made a bad decision and I hurt myself pretty badly on the jump. And that started my med board process. So the med board process, it took 2 years, and it happened during COVID. And at that time, I got to a point where, during COVID, we're at home and isolated, and my kids are at home. They're doing schooling from home, and the cumulative impact of multiple explosions, I was very sensitive to stimulation, light, noise, movement. And when I would get triggered, that tension that we talked about early, it would come out in that anger that I had that saved my life when I was going face to face with the suicide bomber. It would come out at my kids as they're just doing normal kid stuff. And I have four boys, so there's a ton of running, ton of stimulation, fighting. But I couldn't be around them because of that anger. So I would sit here in this office, and a lot of times I would just be in a fetal position, just I don't know. It just felt like I was just being slowly crushed by the world. And, you know, eventually I started to, and this is when I was on my way out, the med board decision already happened. My identity as a soldier is gone. I'm at home, but I can't even be around my family. So that was my transition process. And this is when I arrived. I started to go numb. I started to go numb and I stopped caring about consequences. And I just, that's where I left, arrived at a place where suicide just made sense. What's the point? I'm not a soldier anymore. I can't be around my kids, even though I want to be with them, and the guilt that came with that, not being around them. I'm not a husband to my wife. They're better off without me. You know, that's when I arrived. And then once I started to go numb and stop caring about consequences, that's when I knew that I was in a really dangerous place. Because when I was out and about, that anger, you talked about road rage earlier. It would, you know, I've done some things that I regret. And so I became afraid of what I'm going to do to myself or to somebody else. So that was my transition out of the military.
Yeah.
And
Go ahead.
No, it's just to finish the story, and this is where I didn't know what to do while I was in this situation, so that I drove myself to Walter Reed, to the ER, and I got admitted to the psych ward where I spent a few weeks there.
Yeah. I was going to ask at the time, I guess you just answered the question. I was going to ask you, what stopped you from taking your own life? And
Well, I grew up without a dad. It being present in my life, and there's just something about that I, even though I wasn't capable of being a dad, I still something that I couldn't do to the kids. And then thank God for my wife and her strength for not, because a lot of times guys in similar situation, when there's so much anger with the service inside the service member, a wife typically will you know, take the kids and leave, and my wife did not do that. So that was a pretty big factor that kept me from taking that route.
Yeah. I've never been married longer than you've been alive, but I've been married like 55 years. You bring up a valid point. Spouses do so much that, you know, my wife sort of kept me grounded, and she's really a pretty good sounding board for me all the time. And so I probably never talked to her much about when I had anger issues and stuff like that, because of course I wasn't married at the time. But they do so much, and that's really the cornerstone, I think, of any, you know, any military family is the spouse. They keep us moving in the right. And really, quite frankly, they do so much for us. We don't have to do much other than do whatever our mission is in the military. They're doing everything else, and you're sort of doing your job in the military. So
yeah,
spouses are really the cornerstone.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Hey, we need to take one more break. When we come back, I like to hear how you fought back from that, what sounds like a really dark place. So stay right there. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Now here's a word from one more of the organizations that help make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Part of transitioning out is that dental and vision insurance breaks off from your medical insurance.
Vision and dental is very important to be able to enjoy your retirement.
Blue Cross Blue Shield makes a transition so much easier.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Master Sergeant Retired Pasha Palanker. Remember, this is your show. We know there's There's so many issues out there that directly affect you. And we want to address each and every one of them. So please, as I've said many times on the show, reach out to me. Tell me what topics you'd like us to cover. You can leave me a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. Pasha, just before we, just before the break, you said there was, you went to Walter Reed to the psych ward after, you know, having thoughts of suicide. What turned things around for you? I mean, I know there's a lot of, anyway, what turned things around for you?
Yeah, so just a note of how important this being around other veterans. I remember, because this was during COVID, and I was away from everyone. I was by myself. I remember driving to Walter Reed and thinking, well, at least there'll be other combat veterans there wherever I end up, you know? And I get there and there's not a single combat veteran. It was just people that had in the psych ward, like real psychological issues. And I remember I was so angry. I was so angry, but I couldn't leave. Once you're there, you're not getting out. Everything is suicide proof. There's no, you know, no places. All the doors are slanted. There's no door handles. There's no, you get this much of baby soap to wash yourself. And I remember I was so angry for the first 24 hours there. I was just staring at the wall. I wouldn't talk to anybody. If somebody would come try to get me to go to group therapy, I would just tell them to go away in a much different words. But then I noticed this puzzle, like wall, like shelf with a bunch of puzzles on it. So I grabbed this 1500 piece puzzle. And I didn't even know what it was. It was national parks. I didn't know what the picture looked like. So I just started flipping the pieces over. And it took me 3 hours just to flip all the pieces over. And I started to work on that puzzle. And for 16 hours a day, when I wasn't eating or sleeping, I was working on that puzzle. And these other patients would come and try to join me, and I would just scare them away. So it was, now look back on it, it was pretty funny when I'm in this place full of mentally unwell people, I'm this weird puzzle guy that everybody walks around. But as I'm working on this puzzle, it was just therapeutic to me. My mind started to settle down, that there was no stimulation there. So I started to calm down. And as I'm working on it, I just thinking a lot about what I was going through, how did I get here? And I realized that as I was going through this process, I was, you know, blaming the care that I got early on, like blaming whoever that pushed me into the med board, blaming the VA for like the 10 medications they had me on. And I was just blaming. I was a victim. And, you know, as a victim, all I saw was problems. And the more I thought about my problems, the worse that I got. So then I was like, you know what? I'm going to stop blaming people. I'm the one that volunteered to join the Army. I'm the one that volunteered to go on these deployments to be a part of special operations community. It's my responsibility. And once that happened, it's amazing how quickly, instead of just focusing on the problems, I started to think differently. And while I was there in the psych ward, I remembered about this stellate ganglion block procedure that I've had done years ago that I've gotten some relief that helped me with my sleep. And I asked one of the nurses if I can get that treatment while I was at Walter Reed. And it was kind of new and experimental, and there was a 3-week wait list. But a few days later, there was an opening, and they got me in, and that instantly, that fixed my sleep. And it released, it's a whole different conversation about this procedure, but it released all the tension that I was carrying, and I would go to my appointments with my individual doctors. I still couldn't go to therapy appointments. So I started to feel better, you know, and eventually a week later, they heard what they needed to hear from me, that I'm going to be safe, and then they released me. So then I got out, and while I was out, I started to look for books that I could read that would help me understand what's going on with me, listen to podcasts. I found different veteran nonprofits that I can be a part of where I can get that veteran-to-veteran, you know, bonding, therapeutic experience. And slowly but surely, I started to feel a little bit better. And it does not happen overnight, but it does not need to happen overnight. What's important and what I was feeling was progress. I was feeling like every day I was just a little bit better. And that gave me hope. And then gave my wife and my kids hope. And then, you know, the magic really started to happen is when I was around other veterans, I could see that somebody's in the same place where I was prior to going to the psych ward. So then I would talk about my experience and me sharing my experience with a soldier. Well, give them the permission to talk about their stuff. And I could see that what I went through made an impact on this service member's life, and which kept them from going all the way to where I was. And then one service member led to another one. And then before I knew it, I was speaking to a group of veterans at an event. And then slowly but surely over time, it turned into something that I'm doing now that I never thought I'd be doing, which is having this conversation with you today. So yeah. That was, there's a lot more detail to this journey. There's a ton of specific things that we can get into, but I know we don't have the time to do all of that. The most important thing was,
you know,
accepting responsibility. Responsibility. Yeah. That's it. And not being a victim. That's it.
Well, I think what happened too, though, is you found purpose in your life. You know, you found, You got to have purpose. You got to have something to do. You got to have a direction in life. And I think at that particular time in your life, you found again, we talked about God a long time ago, but you found something that you could help a generation of people, you know?
Yeah.
I got to tell you this story. You know, I think I mentioned to you a little while ago, you know, I went through anger issues after Vietnam years ago. And I really, quite frankly, I don't even know how I worked out of it. I mean, I did some, just like you talked about, I did some crazy. I hit an E7 one time, knocked him over a table, right? And somewhere, somehow, somebody said, hey, look, this guy's not bad. But to this day, I'm not sure how I ever got out of it. I think I got a little bit older. I grew out of it. I started talking. I was a little more open about stuff. And the other thing I did is I really started running, exercising, pushing myself, going in different directions. And it just, I got to admit now, I don't do it no more now. I do the elliptical, but I'd run 5, 10, 15 miles. And it was like therapy for me to exercise and keep going in direction. Anything, did you do anything like that to sort of relax yourself?
So it's funny you bring out running. So when I got out of the psych ward, I got home and I was okay for about a week. And then I started to feel that tension started to come back. And I was so afraid because I didn't want to go back there. And I was afraid of falling right back into where I was. I didn't know what to do. Now, psych ward is not an option. So I had this Forrest Gump moment where I grabbed a camelback. I went to see an Okanel, which is, you know, 15 minutes from my house. And I was just like, I texted my wife, I'm feeling this. I don't know what to do. I'm just going to run. I had 8 hours of daylight left. I said, I'm just going to go 4 hours and hopefully I can come back. And thank God I brought the camel back because you can pump water along the way. I stumbled my way back doing almost 36 miles. And you know, physically, obviously it was a rough morning the next morning, but emotionally, I felt good. I felt good. And I felt that way now for about 2 weeks. And then when that tension started to come back, I was like, I'm just going to go for a 2-hour run on the trail. So running became my lifeline. At that time, running became my lifeline. Anytime I feel that tension come back, I would just go and I would starve it, that anger, that tension. I would starve it out of energy through running. And I noticed running, if you're not able to run, I'm just sharing this, elliptical, bicycle, even just walking, anything that you can do consistently, repetitively. And also when you're running, there's a lot of processing happens and you just see things clearly. So running was my lifeline early on. And then because of running, I was like, let me give this therapy a try. And I got on medication, but it started with running.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that when you talk about exercise, my brain, I do 1 hour at least of PT a day. So I either walk five, well, it's more than an hour, either walk 5 miles, go to the gym, get on the elliptical, or I play 4 hours of golf. so that's mine. Hey, when did you realize you was getting better, though? I mean, you certainly doing better now. When did you realize you was getting better?
You know, it's that just like doing worse, doing bad sneaks up on you. You don't realize that it's happening. Same thing happened with getting better. The way that I realized it is it's people like my wife, my kids. It's being able to be in the room with the kids while they're doing the crazy kid stuff and realizing that I just held back on an angry outburst that would have happened earlier on in my healing journey. So it probably took 6 months before I was like, you know what? I started to feel very optimistic. My family felt the same way, but it was not. You know what happens is you start feeling better, and when you start feeling better, the things that you were doing that got you to that point, you kind of just like, I don't need this anymore. So you stop it, and that's what I did. So I stopped it, and then I kind of fell back. It was like two steps forward, one step back. It took a couple of iterations of that to realize, like, no, I can't stop. I got to continue with the self-care, with exercise, nutrition, and protecting my sleep. All of that stuff gave me the bandwidth that I needed to be functional at home and outside of the house. So, but really, I'll tell you, it's probably last year when I realized that I'm doing well. So it took 4 years. 4 years.
Yeah. Well, I think the key to success, keep talking, keep telling your story, keep telling people and helping other veterans, because I know there's, we can't talk about it now, but I've always thought we should do something in the military to start talking about veterans before they ever go to war, start talking about the effects of war. So when you come back from war, you know what you're going to go through. And I think what happens, you come back, you don't know what's going on. You can't figure out what you're going through. And I think we just need to be a little bit open at the beginning of the military service. Hey, look,
that's
here. Go, yeah. First of all, let me say, you're an incredible individual and you're doing a great job. And I wished you and your family the best luck. How's those? I got to ask you one question. How's those four boys doing?
They're doing great. They're doing great.
Is that right?
You know, my oldest was 10 when I was struggling, so yeah. I still had time. And right now, I got into, because of him, he's a wrestler, I got into jiu-jitsu, and now we train together. And to I just want to say this to any of you who are struggling like I did, who've had broken relationships with your kids. Once you start getting better, it doesn't matter how strained things were, they'll come back to you. They'll want you in their life. And it's nothing, everything is salvageable.
Yeah. Well, you're the dad. Dad and mom,
yeah.
I mean, they believe in you. Hey, first of all, this has been a great discussion. And I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. What do you want to leave the audience with? Hope they heard your story and they understand, but what advice would you leave the audience with? What things you want to leave them with?
It's, take responsibility. Whatever is going on in your life, whatever, you don't have to be in that dark place where I was at, but the sooner you take responsibility to what's happening, the more control you're going to have over your situation and the sooner you get out of that bad situation. And if you are in a bad way, it's not too late. If you're well enough to hear this podcast, to hear this conversation, that means there's a lot that you can do to pull yourself out of it. But you got to take the action. It's not, there's a lot of resources that will help you, but it's your responsibility to take advantage of all of that stuff that's there. And the only way to do it is by taking responsibility.
I think the other thing I'd add to it just a little bit, just make sure you keep talking and never think you're alone by yourself. You know, there's a lot of people that love you and want to take care of you. That's a good thing about being in a military family. You're all related. I always say we're related. I'm just not going to give you any money, but we're related in some way so we can help each other out. Hey, thanks for coming on the show. You're an amazing guy, and I wish you the best of luck for you and your family, and keep up the good work. And if I can ever help you in any way, I'm an easy guy to get a hold of. Reach out to me, and I'll certainly help you.
Appreciate you, SMA. Thank you. This was a great conversation. I kind of feel like I just went through a therapy session.
Well, can I bill you? Wait a minute.
Yeah. Send it.
Gotcha. All right, man. I'll see you later. God bless.
All right. Take care.
Thanks again to Pasha Planker for being with us. I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant of the Army. You've been enjoying Your Next Mission video podcast. And thank you for joining us. Log on to our website, yournextmission.org. And while you're there, you can visit our nonprofit and corporate partners who have jobs and services available that can assist you in your transition out of the military. And check out our job board in partnership with the Recruit Military and Opline, where you can create your own personal profile that will match you with just the right job real time. You can follow me on my personal social media pages, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, and of course, Rumble. And if you like what we're doing at Your Next Mission, please click on that subscribe button below. And don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications about our upcoming video podcast. Remember, we want to hear from you. Leave your message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilley@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Pasha for joining us today and sharing his story. What an amazing story. And I would just, you know, this is the part where I give final thoughts. I would just say you're never alone. Everybody struggles. Don't be afraid to ask for help, because there's too many of us that go home and sit down and say, I can't do it. Be like Pasha. He sort of pulled everything together. He knew he had a problem, and he figured out how to fix it. Then I got to tell you, your family is the cornerstone of life. And make sure that you talk to your family, see what's going on. And then the last thing I'll tell you, your kids grow up so quick. He talked about if you do something wrong, something happens, they'll forgive you. They love you. And they want to do anything they can to make your life better. Again, you're never alone. Stay together and help each other out. Thanks for watching, and thanks to New Mind Studios and, of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, USAA, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.